Which is a more likely reunion, Vinny? Mauricio Pochettino and Tottenham or Vinny Perth and Dundalk?
There was the setup. I see it.
OTB AM. Weekdays from 7:30 AM. Listen on the OTB Sports app. The OTB Podcast Network with Get Set Go. Quickstart car insurance you can sort anytime, online, then bounce on with your day. Get a quote today at getsetgo.ie.
Colin Bowie, good morning to you.
Morning, Dirk. Morning, Owen.
We're a bit late to this because the breaking news about the live score having the Champions League rights, so we're going to have to fly through a little bit of this. But you're here to talk tennis and the French Open. And the way this works is it's 15 love, 30 love, 40 love, game, set, match. What's our 15 love point?
Well, it's Naomi Osaka, and I suppose the question is, what happens from here? So first of all, to point to our own Stephen Doyle, who wrote a great opinion piece on the Osaka withdrawal and the treatment by the media towards her and basically the bullying. So it's a great piece. I recommend people go on otbsports.com to read it. And what it leaves me thinking is, because it's been 2 days now, and I'm wondering what happens now. The four Grand Slams came back out and released a statement after Osaka withdrew and said, you know, they wish her the best and a speedy recovery, almost like it's a physical injury. And they said, you know, we're going to do our best to improve the conditions for players at Grand Slams. But what does that mean? That's so vague. I mean, that's like the European super clubs after the chaos of that and the shambles of it saying, oh, we'll communicate better with fans. But what does that mean on a practical level? So it'll be interesting to see what happens with Osaka and whether she plays this summer. It's a really busy summer of tennis. You have Wimbledon, you have the Olympics, you have the US Open. And does this mean that she's taking time away and going to get her head right and prepare for the press conferences in order to be able to do them? Or does it mean that she's going to basically pick and choose the ones that she wants to do? But I think the big lesson for everybody this week is that, like, depression is ubiquitous, but it's also deeply personal to the person affected. And once Osaka said that she's been suffering from depression intermittently since the US Open in 2018, when she won her first Grand Slam in that tumultuous match against Serena Williams, I think the discussion was over. And I can't believe there's even been a debate since then, because she's a human being suffering from a mental illness and she needs time away. And the only debate for me now is what happens next. And, you know, it's no point speculating about what Osaka's going to do next, because only she knows, really. But I wouldn't be too surprised if she skipped Wimbledon and waits until the hard court season resumes in order to go back playing and feel comfortable. But as Stephen Doyle actually said in the article too, tennis itself is her sanctuary. It's getting to and from the court that's the problem for Osaka at the moment.
And one of the things that I think this is kind of like thrown up, I know the story has moved on quite a bit over the last couple of days, is just sort of the pressure she feels then away from the court. And again, Stephen kind of touched on this in his article, the lack of comfort that sports stars have in arenas that aren't their sport. Maybe we don't quite appreciate that enough, that speaking into a microphone for 15 minutes or however long a press conference lasts with a room full of people, maybe to us seems like the easiest thing in the world, but to her, playing tennis is the thing that's the thing that comes easy to her. And maybe we're only coming around to that sort of realization this week, and that's being hammered home a little bit more. And also the idea that this is an individual sport, like there's no hiding place afforded to an individual when it comes to these dealings. There's no teammates who can go out and face the music after a bad performance or do the media when they're having an off day.
Well she, like Owen, she's not a public speaker, and I mean she never asked to be, and she's very uncomfortable with it. And I mean, the suspicion was when this all started about a week ago, when Osaka said that she wasn't going to do any press at the French Open, the suspicion was that, well, she has a very poor record on clay. She's never gone beyond her third round at the French Open. And in the warm-up tournaments to Roland Garros, she lost in the last 32 of the Madrid Open and lost in the first round of the Italian Open to Jessica Pegula. And she was in a really bad way after that. And her sister, her older sister Marie, took to Reddit to explain that Osaka was really down on herself after that latter loss, because she herself feels that she's not good enough on clay and everybody's telling her that. So we thought it was all a bit superficial, and that it was, oh, she just isn't good on clay, she's not very confident, and so she doesn't want to answer questions about it. But obviously, it's so much more than that. And the surface of the tennis court is tiny in terms of what's going on overall at Osaka's head. But I think she's already a hero for young people. She's a role model. But I think the biggest take from this is she said she's suffering from depression since the US Open in 2018. She won three Grand Slams after that. Like, she's an amazing person and she should be championed. And I hope to see her again very soon.
Okay, there's a much bigger story there that we probably don't have enough time to do justice to this morning. So let's move on rather than spend any more on that. We've got a couple of minutes left. The big three are back. That's our 30 love point.
Yeah, so for the first time in a long time, Roger Federer, Novak Djokovic and Rafael Nadal are all playing in the same Grand Slam tournament. And they're actually all on the same side of the draw because Daniil Medvedev, the Russian, who's had a fantastic last 6 months, he won the season-ending ATP Finals in November. And he got to the final of the Australian Open, obliterated everybody until he met Djokovic in the final. Well, he's number two seed at the French Open. So that means Djokovic and Nadal are either side of him. And that means that they can only play each other in the semi-final. So there won't be a repeat of last year's final, which is only in October, of course, between Nadal and Djokovic. And the mouth-watering prospect is that because Federer is seeded eight, it means that he, if he wins all his matches and Djokovic wins all his matches, they will play each other at the quarterfinal next Wednesday. And that is also the same day, the 9th of June, where the crowds increase from 1,000 on the main court on Philippe Chatrier to 5,000. So that could be an unbelievable occasion. For Federer, he's just come back. He's played a couple of warm-up tournaments. He looks pretty sluggish, to be honest. He's played the Qatar Open, the Geneva Open. He won only one match in those two tournaments, but he did win his first round here against Denis Istomin, and he won it in straight sets. He plays Marin Cilic next. It would be an incredible story, like Federer. He's still level with Rafa Nadal on the most Grand Slams ever won at 20, but he turns 40 in August. You'd say, like, if he's going to win another one, if he's going to get to 21, you'd fancy him at Wimbledon, and that's it. And obviously, if Nadal goes all the way here, he will not alone win his 14th Grand Slam or 14th French Open, which is the same number of Grand Slams that Pete Sampras won in total, but he'll also win his 21st. And then you have Novak Djokovic, who, if he wins at the French Open this year, he'll be the first man since Rod Laver in 1969 to win every Grand Slam at least twice. So history beckons for these three lads, and I hope that they go as far as they can. But on the other side, it leaves the draw open, so there will be a first-time French Open finalist, and it's looking likely to be Stefanos Tsitsipas, the young Greek. Because Medvedev's record on the French, despite being seeded number two, is absolutely atrocious. His first round victory earlier this week was the very first match he's ever won at the French Open.
All right, okay. That's a bit random. He's number two then. Okay, Serena's big week somewhere as well, also chasing a record and trying to expunge one of sport's most unsavory characters. So what happens here?
It's so hard to call, lads, like the women's draw. I mean, they're the last player on the WTA side to retain the French Open was Justine Henin in 2007. She actually won it 3 years in a row. So no one's retained it since then, and there's been a different winner every single year. The last time Serena won it was 2015. But she does have a little bit of a chance here just because Garbiñe Muguruza, the 2016 champion, she's out. Yelena Ostapenko, the 2017 champion, she's gone. Simona Halep is injured. She didn't play this year. Petra Kvitova had a freak incident. She got injured after her press conference after the first round and had to withdraw from the tournament. She's gone. Bianca Andreescu is gone. So it does open the door for her, but she has two big problems in front of her, Serena, and that's Iga Swiatek, the defending champion, who won the Italian Open, the warm-up before the French Open, 6-love in the final against Carolina Pliskova. She's looking very dangerous. And then you have Ash Barty, of course, the world number one and seeded number one, who never got to defend her French Open title last year because she didn't travel to Paris due to the pandemic. She won the French Open in 2019. So if Serena's going to do it, she has to really surpass those two. But what a story it would be. But again, like Federer, I'd fancy Serena more on Wimbledon. And she also turns 40 in September. So it's really the summer for Federer and Serena.
Yeah.
And I'd be really interested to see what
it's
happens.
It's very, very unlikely. I think long odds that either of them win. And match points?
Just shout out to Carla Suarez Navarro, who she's a 32-year-old Spaniard. She's a perennial kind of quarter finalist, the Grand Slams. She was diagnosed with cancer only last September, just before the US Open. She was receiving chemotherapy as recently as the start of this year. And she entered this year's French Open. She actually had a brilliant match against Sloane Stephens, who's a former finalist at Roland Garros. It went all the way. Navarro actually served for the match, but she lost. But it's an amazing story. She'd originally planned to retire in 2020, but then she got ill and then the pandemic happened. So she wanted to have her full swan song. She's recovered from cancer. She tweeted at the end of April that she was cancer-free. That was her last ever French Open match. Because of the scheduling, it's really poor scheduling, the French Open. There was no fans because there's a 9 p.m. curfew in Paris. So she walked off the court to nobody. But she got reams and reams of farewells and great praise online because she's an extremely popular player on the tour. She'll play throughout the summer. She'll play Wimbledon, the Olympics and the US Open, but this is her final year. But it was a great story from a player who was much loved, and like to recover from that illness in that time and play a competitive match against a brilliant player like Sloane Stephens is a brilliant story and much needed for tennis this week.
No,
much
totally. Needed. Look, there's a couple of other stories we'll get to the next time we have you on next week properly when we have plenty of time and there isn't breaking news about live scores coming through. So good stuff, Colm. Thanks a million for that. Cheers.
Cheers, lads.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetsetGo. Quick start car insurance you can sort anytime online, then bounce on with your day. Get a quote today at GetsetGo.ie.